Why do some people seem more creative than the rest of us? More likely to draw or paint, to compose music or to write books? Did they get the creativity gene while the rest of us got left out? Harvard psychologist Shelley Carson's research suggests that nothing could be further from the truth. Not only does everyone come with the same capacity to create, Carson's identified 7 different patterns of creative thinking. She writes about them in her book, Your Creative Brain. She tells Anne Strainchamps that
we all have the capacity to be creative, and in fact, we're all creative each and every day, but we don't think to apply them in certain ways that could make us more creative and enrich our lives. The work that I've done suggests, well, not just my work, but work across the field, suggests that highly creative people are able to activate their brains in certain ways depending upon the stage of the creative process that they're in. And we also know that all of us have the ability to manipulate our brain activation states. And if we can just mimic these states that highly creative people evoke, then we should be able to amp up our own creativity.
You teach a lot of exercises intended to help people activate certain kinds of creativity. What are some of your favorites?
First of all, let me say this, that one of the things that I've done is looked at these different brain activation patterns, and I've identified 7 of them. These are brain sets that we see are activated by highly creative people when they're doing creative work. And by the way, I call them brain sets because they're sort of like mindsets. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get in a different mindset, it changes the way you look at the world. Well, a brain set is like the biological equivalent of a mindset, and it really does change perception, memory, and attention when you get into these different brain activation patterns.
What is one? What's for an example?
Okay, so one of my favorites, or the one that I tend to spend the most time in, I call the absorb brain set. The absorb brain set is when you open your mind to new experiences and ideas and uncritically view your world to take in knowledge. So it's an uncritical way of looking at your environment. So one of the exercises that I've taken from mindfulness that's very effective is to have people, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, unless you're driving, you just close your eyes, take in a few deep breaths, and then you start recognizing and experiencing what is going on through your senses. For instance, you will feel your feet, to spend some time feeling your feet touching the floor, or feeling your shoes on your feet. If you're sitting down, feel how your body is touching the furniture. Become aware of how your clothing feels on your body in a non-judgmental way. And you move through each of the senses, and you'll start hearing sounds you didn't know were there because your sensor's filtering out a lot of this information. And you'll see things you hadn't seen before. Colors become brighter. You'll notice angles and shadows, how light flickers wherever you are. And all of a sudden, you'll become aware of more stimuli coming in from your senses. This is one of the things that you want to do, is prime your, what I call the cognitive workspace, to have more information in it, more bits of information. And as soon as you're not filtering out a lot of this information, you'll have more available to you that you can combine and recombine in novel and original ways.
So if that's a first step, what's an example of maybe a very different mindset?
Okay, so another brain set is the envision brain set. And in this brain set, you're thinking visually rather than verbally, and you're able to see and manipulate objects in your mind's eye. And when you do this, you see patterns emerge, and you tend to think metaphorically. All of a sudden, you'll see comparisons between two things that seem very far removed from each other ordinarily.
So what do you do if you want to enhance that or enter that particular brain state?
Well, one of my favorite exercises I call what if. And what you do is look around you in your environment and imagine what would be the consequences if something in your environment were changed. So what if the sky was green instead of blue? What if trees hung upside down? What if humans had three arms instead of two? And you think of all the consequences, how the world would change when each of these things happens. What if cockroaches ran for Senate? Again, no comment. Okay. So when you start imagining this and actually seeing it in your mind's eye and seeing all of these different consequences that might occur, this is not a trivial or a silly exercise. When you do it, you're actually forging pathways in the brain that will allow you to activate this envisioned brain set more easily in the future.
You know what strikes me about both of those is, I don't know how much time you've spent with young children, but these are things that children do automatically all day long. Every adult who's ever hung out with a toddler knows that sooner or later you get tired of the what if or the why questions. And that's the reason a toddler will take an hour to walk half a block, because they're so absorbed in where they actually are and all the sensations.
Exactly. They are not filtering out what you and I as adults are filtering out. As we mature, our prefrontal cortex matures, and this is the part of the brain that's discerning. It helps us to plan for the future, but it does that by judging the information that's being given to it from the rest of the brain. So as we go through life, what we do is we filter out more and more information so that we can increase the signal-to-noise ratio in our brains. And pretty soon, we're only aware of stimuli that is part of our particular goals for the current time, our current task at hand, or for our survival. But we actually filter this information out. I mean, we literally don't see it, hear it, or feel it, because it's not conducive to accomplishing our current goals. Mm. And kids don't have this level of prefrontal cortex development yet, and so they're still getting all this information and wondering about it. And this is one of the things we want to do when we're being creative, or at least during a portion of the creative process. We want to turn down that prefrontal cortex evaluator and allow more information to filter into our conscious awareness.
Shelley, what's the value for you in doing the work you do? I mean, clearly you have a strong sense of mission about helping people access their creativity, but I guess I'm curious about what the overall benefit is to the planet, if that's not too corny.
Well, my feeling is, and I mean, perhaps there will come a time when we'll become too creative, and then somebody will have to come along and say, whoa, let's be more linear. Let's be more sequential. Let's be more logical. But right now, where things are changing so rapidly, I think that we need to have a real strong population base of people who are able to adapt, take the next step and see where the next step is going, rather than following a already delimited pathway. So I think this is really important for us. When we look at what's going on with our economy, globalism has changed the way everything is interrelated to each other. And this is going to take a lot of creativity from a lot of different sectors and a lot of different people to figure out how it's going to work to the advantage of the human species.
Shelley Carson is a psychologist at Harvard, where she does research on creativity and resilience. She spoke with Anne Strangechamps about her book, Your Creative Brain.